Hi. My name's Johnny Harris. I'm an alcoholic.
Johnny.
Glad to be here today, finally. We left my house at noon. You know, Larry thought it was going to be for an hour. We didn't even get to Los Angeles in an hour, for God's sake. So, but we didn't have anywhere else to go, so we just showed up here 5 minutes before we were supposed to. But I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be sober. I want to thank my friend Mark for extending the opportunity for me to talk about the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, because they're not the most popular subject in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most people use them for a potty change, trying to get ready for to come back into the meeting or wait for the meeting to settle down. When I was new, I waited at the last possible moment to come walking down the aisle to make my entrance back into the meeting after the coffee break, when I knew they were going to read the tradition. I don't know how you are, but when I was new, I used to have to make entrances into places so that everybody knew I was there, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, so I could come in and lay down and sleep so I wouldn't have to find out about anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I had something that a lot of people kind of take for granted today, but I never will take for granted. I had a guy by the name of Norm Alpie declare himself to me one night that he was going to be my sponsor. And I didn't even know what a sponsor was, because it wasn't in the book. That's a good thing for an educated idiot to have. It ain't in the book. You'll never know if you never look at the book what's in there, what's not in there. But anyhow, he asked me. I asked him what to sponsor. He said, well, I'm going to help you get things done to me to be done. And I said, what am I supposed to do? And he said, well, why don't you just do what I do? And so for the last 62 years of my life, I've been doing whatever that man did. And I don't know anybody in the world that I trade places with. And one of the greatest things that he taught me somewhere in 1962, I think it was, we were coming back from a meeting. And of course, I was in a car riding with him, and he was speaker. And so, you know, what do you do when you're with your sponsor? And he asked you on the way home, how'd you enjoy the meeting? And of course, I'd already made my little entrance and moved in alongside of him to hear what I came there for, or see who I was supposed to see. And he said, how'd you enjoy the meeting? And I said, it's fine, Norm, you gave a great talk. You see, Brown knows him with your sponsor. It started way back in the 1960s, so don't worry about it, new to you. But he said, did you listen to the traditions? And I said to him, this stupid statement. Oh, they are to the group what they are to the individual. Well, I don't know what that does to you, but if it's for the group, and I don't belong to a group, what good are they? And he did what he always did when he asked me a question and I couldn't answer it. He pulled off the side of the road and started yelling at me. What's wrong with you? And he said, do you realize, you know who Bill Wilson was, don't you? And I said, yeah, why? He said, you know that Bill Wilson wrote the 12 traditions because of a personal weakness within himself. And I suggest that you go look at the traditions on a personal basis and see how they apply to you. And I've tried to do that for the last 60 years of my life. And sometimes they take on a different meaning on one of them than it did the other one. But I'll go through with you with my experience with the tradition and what they meant to me. I know they're here somewhere. I'm at far country.
So we can hear him better, please. I'm going to try and turn it up a little bit.
You were
got the long form, but I don't want the long form. Maybe that guy's got, he guy had a book down there, had the tradition.
Yeah, he had it on his phone. He had it on his phone.
Is this your book?
No. Okay. Here we go.
All right. Here we go. So let's go with it. It said, number one says, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Do you know what the word unity means? It means we all do the same thing. We're unified in one purpose. That's what it's all about. I personally have been sober for a long, long time. And I've been active in Alcoholics Anonymous from my first day out of the penitentiary in 1961 to this very day. And today, in my lifetime, it didn't have to be a year, but in my lifetime today, if I don't practice and try to incorporate the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life, I'll drink. There's no doubt about that. I've seen enough meetings about Alcoholics Anonymous. I watch people who do not incorporate these steps into their life drink. And I can drink 60-some years of sobriety. It doesn't make me immune to drinking. All I got to do is think that I don't have time for all this nonsense anymore. But what about the tradition? Well, if we don't start adhering to the traditions in our home groups and in AA at all, everybody will be drunk because there won't be any Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, the first tradition, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. See, the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous has to start in your home group. That's where the unified thing is. That's where it comes out. It's there. Where the newcomer comes, it's got to be unified, that everybody's headed in the same direction. I should always remember that that's what I'm supposed to be doing in my home group. I'm supposed to be an example of the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, caring about the group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My group, my home group, continue to survive through all the turmoil and nonsense and changes that are being made. Because I know, without a doubt, if you destroy the groups of Alcoholics Anonymous, there won't be any Alcoholics Anonymous. We can get along fine without New York, but I can't get along very well without the Big Book group on Monday night. I just can't. That's my AA address. And I do everything that that group does because I want to be part of the unity. I don't want to be, you know, the old guy who's been here longer than anybody, or the old guy who started the meeting. I want to be just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been given a lot of privileges and honors in Alcoholics Anonymous over all these years. I've been honored by people asking me to come and share with them, like Mark asked me to come and share about the tradition. I love talking about the tradition, because I know how important they are to me. You see, my common welfare comes first. My common welfare. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. See, I can't recover from the seemingly hopeless mind and body if I don't have some unification from people who are trying to do the same thing. And if we don't all try to do something, the same thing here, there ain't going to be any Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if you're an alcoholic, that could be a death sentence, because people die from this illness through false information. The biggest fallacy in Alcoholics Anonymous is what people call what's wrong. Alcoholism is not a disease. It's not mentioned in this book as a disease. This book calls it a spiritual malady. The traditions are a spiritual entity, the same as the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are. And if I look at this thing, it's like this. My common welfare is to stay sober. And if I don't stay sober, I don't have no family, I don't have no children, I don't have any grandchildren. I'm locked up somewhere in San Quentin or Folsom, whichever one they put me to last. So it's really important for me to understand that this has something to do with me personally, because I also have the opportunity for people to ask me to sponsor them. And if I don't know anything about the traditions or I think they're boring, or I'm not an alcoholic, boring anyhow, if I'm not available to this type of information, then how am I going to help somebody who doesn't know anything about them? I mean, it's deep sound reason. It's that for my group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, and expressing himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. That's exactly what it means. There are no leaders in Alcoholics Anonymous. But we have people who pop themselves up as leaders, I suppose. You recognize them. They just don't do nothing. They just stand around and look and try to look intelligent. You know, which goes to prove how dumb they really are anyhow. You see, what I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is a very simple little thing. It's something that I try to do all the time, but sometimes I neglect it because I'm a human being. I kind of know that everywhere I go, somebody's watching me. You know, when I walked in the door today, people saw me. And I could have went, did some strange thing or told some joke or did something. But I waved and went and sat down like I was supposed to. In my home group on Monday night, I'm not the group. I started the group 50 years ago, but I'm not the leader of the group. I'm just a member of the group. That means I have one vote with the steering committee, and I don't be politicking around there for a month before the elections come to see what goes on. And three, the short form kind of makes it kind of simple for the invasion into Alcoholics Anonymous of everybody. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. The third tradition in the long form does not say that. Somebody got a brilliant idea and wanted to sell more books, I guess. I don't know what the purpose is in changing all the wording and means things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know where that word disease came from. It came from the American Medical Association. Bill Wilson gave a talk in 1960 to a group of people, alcoholics and some Catholic organizers. And he said that the American Medical Association wanted to call our illness a disease. And he says, it's not a disease. He spelled over and he says, it's not a good thing for the alcoholic to think. You know what? This is how sick my mind is after all these years. So if I get a little confused with you, just got a sick man talking to you, for God's sake. Do you know what I would do if I ever had adopted that idea of a disease? Well, it's not my fault. Not my fault. My mother drank, and my father drank, and my uncles and aunts and my grandfathers drank. My grandmother didn't. Don't you think grandma would have caught alcoholism if it was a disease, even back then? You see, to me, Bill Wilson warned us about this. He didn't think it was a good thing for us to be trying to do, because it's not anybody else's fault I'm an alcoholic. I don't know where it comes from, and neither does anybody else. Nobody has ever figured out why maybe only 1 out of 10 people who take a drink of alcohol suffer from alcoholism. There's all kinds of moderate drinkers. There's even heavy drinkers. But they don't have the illness of alcoholism. You see, the moderate drinker or the heavy drinker can quit. given any type of reasonable excuse. I quit for 20 years every time they arrested me. And as soon as I got unwrapped before whatever was bothering me and got wherever I was going, I just lit it up again. They have things to drink in penitentiaries, I'll let you know, called Pruno. And if you haven't drank any Pruno, you couldn't be an alcoholic anyhow. You'd have to really have some type of dedication to drink Pruno. But the requirement thing says in the long form, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety, not for dinner or picnics or whatever they go to do. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided as a group they have no other affiliation. That'd been tore all to hell for a while. But that's warning you about things that you just get caught up into this stuff every now and then. They're changing the words of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is responsible for more sober living and better lives than any book that's ever been written in the history of the world besides the Bible. This book has changed more lives than all the combined therapy in the history of the world. Because Alcoholics Anonymous is spread all over the world. It says, each group, I should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Each group should be autonomous means, that is self-governing. This group, or wherever your home group is self-governing. It doesn't have to have any help from any outside agencies. Your group is self-governing. It's just like I'm self-governing. But to my home group, I'm just a member of my home group. It just makes a lot of difference between the worry in the short form and the worry in the long form. Why would they change that? Why? Well, because they probably need more books to sell, I suppose. I don't know why they do this. I've asked questions to people who go to the General Service Office over the years. Who gives you the authority to change the stories in the book? Yeah. Oh, the committee. I said, no. Who's the committee? He said, why? I said, I want to talk to them. See, we're supposed to be, this is what we're supposed to be doing here, is identifying with an illness so we can help somebody else recover from it. We're not supposed to be identifying with Mark, you know what I mean, or anybody else, or whether you're foreign or not foreign. We're supposed to, recovery starts with the identification of an illness called alcoholism, if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous or you're an alcoholic. It doesn't start with, because I like him. You know what I mean? It's not, I could like him, but that if he doesn't have the message for me to be attracted to, he can't help me. He can't put his arm around my shoulders when I'm feeling down and pat me on the back. Because the minute he takes his arm off my shoulder, I'm right back at being in the depression or wherever I'm in. See, that's what it's all about. That's where the unity comes in. That's why everybody in your home group should be headed in the same direction. They all go, it's never going to happen 100% in any group you go to, so forget it. There's always going to be people sit around there that think that you could have done better. You know, I look around on Monday night and the only thing we can get better is get more chairs or room to put them in. But, you know, I can't change anything in my home. And whatever the election turned out to be, I back whoever elected to it, whatever's got going on. Because we're only allowed to talk their little talks for a year, and then they get voted out. And here's one of them that I'm going to read to you how I look at it. I have but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I don't have any other purpose. Why would I? And the group, more specifically, should be autonomous, which means self-governing. And its primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It's not some showcase that you go to once or twice a week and look for somebody to entertain you for 15 or 20 minutes, or talk about what movie you went to or what dinner you're going to go to next week. But it's really a lot of mixed up things in alcoholics' minds today, the way I see things from the way I got here. You see, when I first read these traditions the way Norm told me to read the traditions and try to apply them to my life, a home group started to mean something to me. And my behavior started to mean something to me. Because what I want for all of you is to recover from this seemingly hopeless mind of state and body. You know, I may not even know you, but I want you to recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And it's just the most amazing thing. Sixth, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. These problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. What does that mean? Well, I got a story I want to tell you about something. It's about court cards, signing court cards. When I was a little stronger and not so weak, a little younger, I used to do a lot of traveling around talking in AA. And I was in Alabama one time, on a Saturday night talking, and there was a girl there, a nice looking lady, you know, but she just was a nice looking lady. She looked a lot like you, a little brunette. No, I'm not pointing the finger at you, honey. But she was nice, but she didn't look like she was interested in AA. She was looking around for something else or doing something else. But her husband was there, and he was a judge. And I don't like judges. I never have. I never will. And I've even sponsored some. Boy, they really had to walk the line, I'll tell you that. But anyhow, he was a sweetheart, and during the course of the evening, I kind of got close to him. You know how you talk to somebody and shake hands with them, and you just have some running dialogue and all that. Well, I didn't think much of it, but I said goodbye the next morning to my host, and I wouldn't come home. And I'm home about a month, and I get a big, thick package in the mail, about that thick. And it was an article in the local newspaper. It said that this woman had been arrested for having her husband killed by her boyfriend. And what she had done, she had subpoenaed every member of that group to court to lie for her and tell her that she was there and do all this kind of stuff. Oh, I tell you. Well, she got found out because her sister was in on it with her. And her sister's boyfriend, who did actual killing, turned state's evidence or something. But you see the damage that she did in that little town of Alabama because it was in the newspaper. All they had to go to court. just because somebody used AA for defense. Now, every time you sign a court card, how do you know that that person stays for the meeting? Or sign them after the meeting, how do you know that? Well, the tradition covers something that most of us fail to do. It's step six. Every AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. These problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. That's pretty clear, isn't it? Every time you sign a court card, that's what you're doing. You're violating that tradition. Show you how much you're a boss I am at my home group. I can't get them to quit signing a court card. You know, I've had the experience of what they can do, damage they can do. I'm not interested in saving everybody, but I don't ever know when one of these things will kill some alcoholic sitting in the meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, that's my purpose in sobriety, is to stay sober and carry the message to the individual or to the group. I don't really care what it is, but I want you to recover from this seemingly hopeless mind and body to situation to alcoholism. And the only way that we can recover, that I can recover, is to have something to tell the newcomer about recovery. It's just that simple. The problem with Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, for all these years, it's just too damn simple. We don't drink. We find out why we don't drink. We recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body in some way, shape, or form. We figure out how we can carry that message to the next alcoholic or the alcoholic, any alcoholic, no matter who it is. I never know who's getting the message. But my purpose is not to know who's getting the message, because if I thought that you were getting my message, I'd point it at you. I'd probably get us both drunk. You know, because how do you know? I'll tell you a little story about this thing here. For years and years and years, there was a banquet in Folsom State Penitentiary that I used to go to talk every year. Bill went with me a couple of times. And when I was 21 years old, I was in Folsom State Penitentiary, a young man, bulletproof, like most of us are. We're slick and young. We know everything. We know everything that's so really unimportant that we don't really know nothing, but we're bulletproof. We got that little image hanging out there, whatever it may be. And once a year, 1 month, I went up there 1 year, and I don't know what it was, but I had a terrible feeling of, I don't know, just something. You ever got one of them funky feelings that you carry with you for a period of time? Well, I don't know what you call it, depression or what you call it. But I didn't feel like I always did when I walked through that yard and them guys started hugging me and we started shaking hands and doing that, because most of those people I knew. And I carried it all the way through me. I had a good time with all the guys. And I was walking out, the warden, who was my host, said, "What's the matter with you, Johnny?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm coming down for something." And we're walking out of the penitentiary to the gate. And I thought about it. And I turned around and looked him in the eye and I said, "I know what's wrong." I said, "I hate to just talk to 300 hard shell convicts." I'm not talking about inmates, I'm talking about hard shell convicts. Most of these people will never get out of that penitentiary. And of those who do, may never come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the warden said to me, "Then why do you come? Why do you come?" And I said, "He said, you pay your own way up here. You spend a weekend away from your family. And you have to stay all night. And why do you come?" And I said, "Well, maybe someday. there'll be another Johnny Harris sitting in the back row of the penitentiary. Now, I don't ever know when it's going to happen. I know it's happened from some time because I've had some people contact me. But I've only seen one guy in all the years that I did that show up at a function of Alcoholics Anonymous. That made every damn trip that I made to both the penitentiary and every word I've ever been or every meeting I've ever been to make a difference in my life. Because I saw somebody who had heard the same message that I heard about recovery from this seemingly hopeless state of mind. Number 7 is one of my favorite ones. It says, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting and declining outside contributions. I remember when I was new, I didn't work very well, but nobody wanted to hire somebody. All I knew was how to play dominoes or make pruno. That's not a good exercise. And so we were sitting in a meeting one night, and the basket came. I just passed it to Norm. Norm had it, passed it back to me. I passed it back to Norm. He passed it back. He says, put something in there. I said, I don't have anything. He said, how much you got? I said, I got a couple bucks. He said, put a dollar in. I said, this is all I got. He says, I don't care. I said, well, I do. And he said, okay, then don't drink your coffee, eat your donuts. He says, I don't want to pay for your damn donuts and coffee every night that you're here. Or the next guy that don't have any money. He said, you can't be a bum here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to become self-supporting through your own contribution. You know, you go to a meeting, somebody sets it up, somebody makes the coffee, somebody has to buy donuts, somebody has to buy cookies. You have to do something there. The money doesn't, you know, if you don't put nothing in there, why should you reap the benefits of everything? You know, if you don't want to put any money in your basket in my group, I'll look at you and tell them the same thing Norm told me. You know, if you're not going to put anything in a basket, why don't you quit eating the donut? Well, I guess a real resentment's built up on that. And I know I have I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I have a bad problem of looking over my shoulder and seeing people pass the basket. You know, and some of them are contractors. Some of them are doing better financially than I am. Jesus. And I even checked the one in my own row. Make sure Larry puts his in there. Which most of my guys are pretty well. They don't want to look at me in the eye. But, you know, you see how these things affect me. You see, you don't understand, before I got here and before you found me, I was a taker. All takers are losers. You're looking at one. You know, somewhere along the line, you got to learn how to give just for the hell of giving it. You know, putting a dollar in the basket means something, even if it's next to the last dollar that you got. In other words, when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you stay here long enough, sooner or later you ought to quit being a taker and start being a giver. And I remember, I forgot one of the statements somebody made to me when I was in penitentiary. I said to these people who came up here on the panel, I said, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You get in your car on Sunday morning and you drive 100 miles up those back roads and you spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who don't want to listen to them. What do you get out of coming up here anyhow? He said, Johnny, we can answer that question. You won't have to ask it. I just know that all takers are losers. I look at one. And it doesn't make any difference what your excuses are. If you're going to sit in a meeting and drink coffee and eat a cookie, put something in the basket. If you don't do anything else in alcoholics, if you don't take care of your home group with money, you probably don't even take care of AA anyhow. What difference does it make? He'd probably just be one of these people who just passing through that week or that day. But you're not. Hey, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers employ special workers. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have any working skill. I'd never had a job when I came out of the penitentiary in 1960. I never had one. I didn't need one. I had all the money I needed. That's why I kept going back to the penitentiary. And so I was invited to a symposium. And the theme of the symposium, I was invited by the warden of the penitentiary I came out of, because he watched me change because of you. And he recommended that I go to this thing because he knew I was having trouble making a living. And the role of this thing with the symposium was the role of the offender in treatment. That lit me up because they offered me a job. And it was good, $1,000 a month, company car, a little desk down in Huntington Park in the parole department with my name on it. I could just sit back there every day and see my name on something besides an arrest warrant. But anyhow, this is what I was asked to do. I was supposed to go to the parole department and find these jackasses in there who were faking it because they want to do something and get away with it. I'm supposed to pick them up and take them to an AA meeting. Take them back and drop them off, and then write a report on it and give it to the parole department, because in essence what I was going to be a parole department stool pigeon. That's not funny. Not me. When you live the way I live for most of my life, a stool pigeon is not a good name. You get you killed in most places I've ever been. I went back to that symposium that next day and told them I'd be glad to come and visit anybody that wants to visit with me, but I can't do what you asked me to do. I'll do that when I get off of work, if I'm working, because I know it's for free and for fun here. That's what I was taught. I'm not supposed to get anything but joy and happiness and peace of mind here. Some type of a calmness about life and a devotion towards life, that I have something to do besides just sticking my hand out all the time, or expecting somebody to put something in my hand, or thinking I'm entitled to anything. The only thing I'm really entitled to, if you want to know the truth, was on my fifth step, was sitting in a damn gas chamber in San Quentin when I was 22 years old. That's what I was entitled to. I didn't have to, but I was shown I was going to be sitting there. I don't have any entitlement at all. I have to work for a living. Not very hard, but I still have to work for a living. My wife has a good job. That helps. But I still have to do, I still have to become self-supporting through my own contribution. I have to pay the bills of my house. I have to pay my car payment. Nobody pays my car payment for me. Excuse me. I got to get my handkerchief. It's a piece of paper, but it's a handkerchief to me. It's really amazing what these traditions will speak to you if you try to put them in a personal basis. You see, the reason I didn't take that job, and I could have probably went all the way to the parole board in Sacramento or something, because of my experience, The reason I couldn't take that because in the middle of all this thing, I had a little recess, and I had to go pick up this old lady by the name of Earl Snyder, who comes to the penitentiary, and take her to a meeting. And I told her, "Oh man, gonna get a new car. We'll get to where we're going from time to time." I give her this big rundown about the desk and $1,000 a month, which is a lot of money, and the whole thing. She said, "What are you going to do?" And I told her, and this is what she said to me: "How do you sell a gift, particularly if the gift ain't yours?" See, I had to go back the next day and tell these people I can't take their acceptance. I'd do whatever I had to do to carry the message for free and for fun, but I'm not going to get paid for it, because I can't bastardize my association in Alcoholics Anonymous by trying to save somebody who was giving me something free. And I'm tickled to death that that little old lady brought my back to the senses. The citizen said, "Oh, that's really nice, honey. You're going to have a good start paying job." She knew that my life was in jeopardy, even though I didn't know it. Because I've seen people who tried to do that in Alcoholics Anonymous and end up in disastrous situations. You know, now they have people who are permanent residents in some of these places, and they all come to Alcoholics Anonymous just because they have to. Not because they're looking for anything more, just a way to get out of something that they're in. It says AA ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those. You got a committee to run this thing, I think. I think. I'm going to leave that there. But it's, they are people who do things. They don't get paid anything for it. You see, that's a way to be able to give something. See, the whole purpose of getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Because if you're an alcoholic, and I'm just a guest here, if you're an alcoholic, your life will depend upon carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. You cannot stay sober if you're an alcoholic and not have that simple little freedom step done in your life. If it's not anything more than standing in a greeting line or walking up to somebody that looks like they're lost and shaking their hands, asking them, "How are you doing?" And you can always spot those people at any meeting that you go to. They look like they're lost. We have a roundup at the desert, and I go down there and make a talk on Saturday down there. But anyhow, we were standing outside one meeting on Friday night, or whenever it was, Thursday night or Friday night, I forgot what it was. And the guys, all my guys, were all gathered up. They're going to go play golf the next day. And I looked over there, and there's standing this guy's wife, a cute little blonde. And I said to her, "You want to have breakfast? I'm having breakfast with a bunch of people in the morning. You're more than welcome to come and have breakfast with her." She lit up because somebody paid attention to her. The next morning, one of the gals was sitting down at the table. There was about, I don't know, 10 or 12 of us. And that little gal was sitting there just laughing and having a good time. But this person was carrying the message to her. A simple thing is doing that. But it's kind of hard to have any type of simple idea or thought about somebody else when you're so full of yourself. You know, when all you think about is yourself, or what you're getting out of the meeting, or what you're getting out of the house, or what you're getting out there, or what movie you saw, or what's going on, it's kind of hard to be open enough to be thinking about anything but yourself. But you can recognize it in another human being, because if you have been in that position, you know exactly how they feel. that they're all alone in the world at that moment. Her husband's going to go play golf, and she'd never been there before. What was she going to do? I mean, all she had was her husband. But that little gal's still coming to two or three meetings a week. She comes to two of our meetings a week, every single week. And I just let you know that there are ways to carry the message in Alcoholics Anonymous without reciting the book to them or reading the traditions to them or standing to make a talk. There are all kinds of ways to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. An act of kindness is beyond most of the people in this room. I'm sorry, but that's about the way I see it. You're not interested in why you're here. I don't even know why you're here. You're easy to spot. Like that little gal standing there was easy to spot. It looked like she was out of place. And it's really sad because this may be the only opportunity in life. That little arrow or little thing in the cosmos, that little arrow of life or little area of your life, you have to walk through there to have the freedom of Alcoholics Anonymous or the freedom of your life or to be able to change your life. Because it really requires some type of surrender. And if you're there, I hope you follow that because it really means a lot. Number 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. I try that real hard to do that. I try real hard not to hide my anonymity so much, is that I don't like being placed on Facebook. I had a guy one night come up to me and thank me because he just published a book that had my story or talk that I had made to the prisoners in the terminalized prison was the last chapter in his book. And I said to him, what? You put my story in a book without my permission? I ought to sue you. Looking for money. And I said, you can't do that. He said, I already did, Johnny. I said, well, there's nothing I can really do about it. You can't take the book back, but I hope the book's a failure. Because I don't want to ever have to do something that the guy in that story commits another felony, go to another penitentiary, or hurt somebody or runs over somebody in a drunken stupor. I don't ever want my name alongside of that. I don't think the names in the big book ought to be in there if they're still alive. Because as long as one of us are alive, we're subject to any type of disaster in life because we're just basic human beings. Nobody has reached that pinnacle that I know of, and I've known a lot of great people in AA. It says our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. That's what I was just talking to you about. I'll go anywhere to talk. Must be time to go back to home. I'll go anywhere to talk. It doesn't make any difference where it is. But I will not publish my name in a book on my own. It gets done from time to time. I fight people about putting me in Facebook. We have people and put their whole story in Facebook and hope somebody would ask them to speak somewhere. I'm sorry, I know a couple guys that have a Facebook. I'll be in your area next month. And he's in that Facebook, all the big meetings around there, hope he can get elected or invited. He's not one of my good AA members, but I don't think that's right. My policy is what I just told you. my personal policy is, I'll tell you what my name is, but I'm not going to put it in press, radio, and film. I'm not anonymous as far as you're concerned here today. Not at all. I'll give you my phone number if you want it. Anything. I'll do whatever. You got a meeting or some people. Anything. You got to, you know, I've had people bring me their kids to talk to. A lot of things have happened to me since I've been sober, just because I'm available to help one of you if you need help. And it doesn't make any difference who you are, where you are, where you came from, or who you are, whether you live in Palmdale or not. You knew I had to get Palmdale in there somewhere. Didn't you? But it is an amazing thing. You see, I don't get anything out of Alcoholics Anonymous other than the fact that every once in a while God exposes you to me, who somehow or other I have touched. Maybe I'll never see him again. But that's the joy. You see, that's what this is really all about. It's really all about not me staying sober and being a fire hazard when I put my candles on my cake. Not that at all. Or being a sober person or practically everywhere I go. That's not what it's all about. I'm just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's willing to help you if you need help and you ask for it. Now, I'm not going to volunteer anything, but I'll help. These guys who prove that to you, just ask them. I drew to show you, I'll take most anything. But it's all my great joy to do that. That's my public relations is that. I'm my public relations today. My sponsor used to tell us better in everything that I know of. What you are, speak so loud I can't hear a word you say. I've heard some of the greatest speeches in Alcoholics Anonymous, some of the biggest jackasses in Alcoholics Anonymous. True. I mean, we're not here to entertain things. Sometimes it gets a little laughter, a little giggle. But what I'm here for is to try to carry the message of sobriety to the alcoholic. I'd like to be able to have the General Service Office read the traditions. I don't think they'd understand them. That's my own pet peeve. Now here is what this 12th tradition is really all about. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our tradition, ever reminding us to place principle before personality. You've got to climb somewhere spiritually to be able to put that tradition to work in your life as an individual. First, number one thing, it's a spiritual foundation here. Everything blooms up here with the foundation of spirituality. Everything is spiritual in Alcoholics Anonymous. The steps are a set of guidelines that will lead you to a spiritual awakening, they call it, which has happened to me. The tradition will make me a better member of my home group because I want to be part of the unity. I don't want to be a part of a distance. I don't want to be the ones always shooting their mouth off in a business meet or something to change the group. I just want to be a part of it. I want my group to always be there so my great-grandchildren and a couple of my grandkids will have AA to come to whenever they get there. You see, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all of our traditions. Ever remind us to place principles before personality. See, you have to incorporate principles into your life so you can understand the difference between principles and personality. You just have to understand that. There's a big, big difference between principles and personality. Most business meeting, an election to Alcoholics Anonymous are run on personalities. And it worked on by personalities. In our little group on Thursday night, years ago, we had a whole bunch of kids come to meetings, girls and guys. And they were all real busy members of AA. And I remember we were sitting, we were having an election for secretary. And one of the gals was sitting right behind me. And the two girls who ran for secretary, this girl back there behind me, sponsored both of them. And you know what she said? I like Mary, but I think Alice would do a better job, so I'm going to vote for her. Gee, that's a principle above a personality. I mean, I would be able to do that with the people I sponsored. I would be able to say that and use some honesty with them, and they would expect me to. Because they've been sober a long time, a lot of them, and they never had any bad information that I know of pass by. But it's, the tradition will bring about more of a personality change than anything else. After you complete it to the point where you're incorporating the 12 steps into your life, the tradition is another way of further gathering up your deal and learning how to face these things that I talk about and make a personal thing to you. You see what I'm talking about? But that's all I got.
Some of the questions here, I'm just going to hand them over to you. You want me to read them? Read them out.
You read them, Mark. You read them, Mark.
You want Mark to read them? Well, people from Palmdale really stick together.
All right. Can someone who is of service, can they date another alcoholic with less sobriety time? It's Palmdale.
Oh boy. It's a matter of when women come into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now you ladies from Palmdale, you're all ladies as far as I'm concerned. I know most of you. Spent a weekend with you a couple weeks ago. But the whole damn group came up here, I think. But anyhow, to me, I'm married to a woman I call it. I love her tremendously. And I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous because I've listened to alcoholic women speak from time to time that you don't get here any different than the lady sitting next to you. We all know what drunken women do. And so to the best of my ability, I try to treat the women alcoholics and alcoholics and moms I know with a little bit of dignity. That's the best I can do. And there are leeches in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, who will play on the newness of a woman, because most women are lonely when they get here. And alone, like that little blonde-headed lady standing down to where her husband will play golf. She's not into it. And I've known guys who walk up, put their arm around them and say, "Can I take you to coffee, dear?" You don't see her anymore. So you always got to take those things into consideration. I have a name for them, but this lady is present. I wouldn't put it out there loud, but it's very meaningful to my guys. They know what it is. I just call them cripple something. Okay.
All right. Why do the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting? Is this against the tradition?
It isn't. It isn't.
Okay.
Matter of fact, the Serenity Prayer is even more godly than the Lord's Prayer. And some people, I guess, have just never surrendered enough to believe in some type of a power greater than themselves. Why would you be against a prayer? Your rusty butt's probably sitting in a meeting tonight, today, because somebody prayed for you somewhere along the line. None of us get here on our own volition. Somebody prayed for each and every one of us. And if you could get that into your thick little skull, or you quit being a guest in Alcoholics Anonymous, start to become a member, and practice these principles, and you put these principles to work in your life, you may understand what that third Lord's Prayer said. It says, Our Father. Our Father, that means all of us. He even tells you where he's at if you want to go get him. That's what it means. Our Father. We're all God's kids. Why anybody would be against some intellectual idea about a prayer is beyond me. But I've been sober long enough and around enough jackasses to know they're here. Just don't ask me to go to coffee.
Okay. Is it okay to pass a basket in an AA meeting for a Christmas gift?
Yeah, if my name was on the list. You pass the basket. The only reason we pass baskets in Alcoholics Anonymous is you who are still selfish and self-centered and self-serving will get an opportunity to be selfless for a moment by dropping something in there. And we're self-supporting for our own contribution. I mean, we pay rent. We buy coffee. We get literature here some people take and never pay for. There's a lot of things goes on here that money in that basket, that's what it's for. If you have any type of spiritual doubt or spirituality comes into the Alcoholics Anonymous, is in that basket. That's for materialistic and spiritualistic gathered together. But the book, you know, Bill gave you an out if you have trouble with God or anything that sounds religious. I'm not a religious person. I'm a very spiritual man most of the time. But I live by spiritual principles, and there is a big difference between spiritual principles and religious principles in my case. See, I couldn't buy church when I was younger. I put my children to church. Had them both baptized. I've been baptized. But this basically is my church. This is what I believe I was born to do. Now, you can believe anything you want, and I'm not going to browbeat you about believing. The book said, God, do you understand it? You know, I just don't think it's a doorknob.
Okay, when members stomp on tradition in an AA club, how can I help?
They stomp?
When members stomp on traditions in an AA club, how can I help?
That's not...
I guess stomp or... Yeah.
I don't know.
Trash talk traditions.
Oh.
You know, they don't understand it, yeah.
I don't understand the jive talk. My daughter told me, I'm just a lame. You're a lame daddy. I said, yeah, but you ought to see me when I wasn't lame. She's an attorney now. I had to try to tell her, why in the hell were you an attorney when I needed you? She says, I wasn't even born yet. You weren't even married when you needed me. As a matter of fact, Grandma couldn't even help me. So, you know, I don't understand a lot of this stuff, but I just know that Alano clubs are a necessary evil in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I know about Alano clubs is this: you can't grow spiritually in an Alano club. There's not a spiritual, oh, where I go to them, I go there to talk whenever they ask me, whatever it is, but I can't feel a spiritual area there that I feel in this room today. I just have, or any other AA meeting outside of a fixed unit. See, our group has, what, Larry, how many meetings do we go to? One every week or something, every day?
Five.
We've got five meetings a week, our home group, but they're not in the same location. And they're all self-governing. It's the way it should be. So I can't talk about the club because I never had to use one except to go there to be a part of it.
As a group, can the group deny memberships to an individual, not as an AA member, but as a member of the group, based on the fourth tradition? Let me try that again. As a group, can the group deny membership to an individual, not as an AA member, but as a member of the group, based on the fourth tradition?
Well, each group is autonomous. That means it's self-governing. They don't have to do what General Service has to do. Our group has, we still have men and women in our group, not people. See? I don't know. But you see, any group can run whatever it wants to run, but it has to have a group conscience to do anything like that. It can be done if they want to do it, because no member has, no one person has a right to come in and disrupt a group. Just disrupting the group. And so the group will take a vote on that, and whatever the group says, that's the group conscience. So.
Alright. Is it okay to take pictures in the meeting for birthdays?
I don't know. I have my picture taken at birthdays. What am I going to say? That's not right. I don't know. That's up to you. You know what I mean? Inside of this meeting here, practically anything goes. If you want to take a picture of your family being with you, have your picture taken for your birthday, bring your family. What better atmosphere can you show your mother from what a jackass you used to be to where you are now? Every Monday night, I sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is my home group, and many of you have been there, and I see God's presence and feel God's presence at a moment that most people don't even think about. And that moment is when we pass out 30-day, 60, 90-day chips. And then the payoff is when the members of our group stand there and take a birthday cake, come walking over, the sponsor has them a birthday cake, and they're dressed nicely, and they get up and they thank God and the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and their sponsor. And you know what I see? I see the evidence of God. Where else can you see that and recognize what it is? You know, there has to be some power greater than us, or that's beyond human individual realization or understanding of it. If you could understand what God is or isn't, you're really a dense person. Because deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the basic fundamental idea of God. That's why you have to search deep here to uncover and discover and discard this God thing. It's really almost too simple for anybody with an intellect who'd been educated beyond their intellect to understand this is what we do here. We come here, the only thing in our life that matters is taking a drink. And somehow or other, because we incorporate this book into our lives, every part of it, something happens in this journey that we're on. It turns us completely around. It makes us believe in some power greater than self. The book calls it God. So I call it God. The book says I take an inventory, so I take an inventory. It says I take a thorough, searching and thorough inventory, so I take a search. When I took my inventory, I took it with a preacher in a penitentiary because I couldn't go tell my gang that I'd been scared all my life. I did things because I was frightened. I was Johnny, you know what I'm saying? So I had to tell it to somebody, but I didn't want to put it on the yard. I told that man that day in that fifth step things that would have kept me in a penitentiary for the rest of my life. Just because the book says so. See, this is where I get my message. I've sponsored to show me how to live out here, how to correct me if I make a mistake. They don't yell at me, don't scream at me. They say it's not a good idea. Sometimes I don't take the word for it, but I have to go back and say it wasn't a good idea. But if it's in this book, I believe it. And if it ain't in this book, that's just somebody's idea. And we got enough of those intellectual giants and alcoholics anonymous to bury this convention. Is that the question?
That's the end of the questions.
That's it.
Unless you want to tell us their story about walking with Chuck on the beach.
Oh.
We'll close this out with that.
Well, I didn't walk with him on the beach.
Okay.
See, you got it wrong.
Okay, I got it wrong.
Or I was in trouble, or thought I was in trouble. When I was due, I had this old man who adopted me. His name was Chuck. He's my papa. He always has been and always will be. The only father I ever knew. And when I was troubled one day, I went down to see him, and he was lived in Laguna Beach. And where it went, he was bowling on the green. You know, shame, how do we have to? But he said, sit down and have a cup of coffee. So I sat down and have a cup of coffee. When he got out of the sun, shady, it wasn't warm, so I thought I could ask him his question. I don't even remember what the question was, if you want to know the truth, but it must have been life-saving. Deadly. You have, every question when you're new is deadly. Really, I mean, you got to have an answer for it. And there ain't no answer to some of them. And so he said, look out there. And he pointed at the ocean. And I could see the ocean. I didn't even have glasses on. And I said, yeah. He said, what do you see? I said, I see water. I thought that was a smart enough answer for him. He said, no, Johnny, from that point to that point, it's 7 miles to the horizon. I said, really? I'm not going boating. I don't need to know about the horizon. I just want to know. And he said, okay, wait a while. So we got in the car. We drove up to the house. We're sitting down. We're sitting in our chairs. And so I thought it calmed down. We were eating cashews. We're having a good time. I asked him the question again. And he says, look out there. And he had a big house, looked out at the water. You could see Candelina Island and some other things. And so he said, how far can you see? Then I said, 7 miles. And he said, you still don't get it, do you? And I said, I don't have the slightest idea what you're trying to teach me, Pop. I really don't. I'm not a geographer, I'm not blah, blah, blah. And he said, to that point is 24 miles. He said, you still don't get it, do you? And I said, no, I don't. Because I was always honest with him. He says, the further you go, the higher you go, the more there is to see. And if you could see what there is to see, it would blind you. And he says, it all comes from growing. The book says, we grow along spiritual lines. And you can't grow along spiritual lines without activity. And your activity, if you're a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, your dedication should be either affording a place for the alcoholic to recover in, or making sure it stays there. And your job is to make sure that you welcome the alcoholic, new or old, when they get there. That is spiritual growth. The book has a story in it about a guy who got sober, got drunk. Another guy got sober and got drunk. And he came back and be good members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Bill wrote in the story, and the story's in the back of the book, they haven't changed it yet. You grow spiritually in Alcoholics Anonymous, very simply, by experience and constant work with other alcoholics. It's where you get the experience as you constant effort and constant work with every other alcoholic. That's where you grow spiritually. You don't grow spiritually by putting your ass in a chair in some meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous someday and acting like you know what's going on. Because that's all you got. You're nothing but a guest here. And what we need today more than anything else is members of Alcoholics Anonymous, not any more guests. You got anything else, Mark?